And welcome, 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 dear listeners. Good morning, good morning, good morning, wherever you find yourself on this lovely Monday morning. Yes, this time it is lovely, as opposed to obviously, you know, when we conversed yesterday morning, specifically on a Sunday morning, where, you know, we didn't know if we were coming or going in that particular session. Not me, you know, the morning itself. But then obviously, you know, the big question would be out there in terms of Dwight, how could the morning give you a clear indication of where it wants to go in terms of just how it's going to be present itself? There's nothing we can ultimately do about that. But as we find ourselves, you know, obviously in the time frame between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m., you're in our company here on Eagle FM, specifically as we always do, where we bring you the early morning scoop and also provide you with the particular updates coming in from around the world as well as also here in a local setup. We do have a little bit of a, if I can call it like a lovely session for this morning. I'll use the word lovely, yes, guys, because any of the other particular, you know, words or vocabulary I'd like to apply would probably not sit so well with the idea in terms of the today's menu. But today's menu includes both an insightful discussion into local entrepreneurship as well as also putting a quick look, taking a quick look primarily at a development coming out from the public service itself in terms of what is the next steps and, you know, what is to be envisaged for that sector. For the other one, we're going to take an in-depth discussion with both talking to people participating in a school development project as well as also a analysis with regards to someone taking a look at this particular approach as well as also providing what it looks like. Our particular guest for, well, not guest, but rather guest speaker is Mr. Danny Mayer from SME Compete, as well as also we talk to Madam Margaret Nurukom, who is from the Waldorf School, where primarily these particular entrepreneurship conversations center on in this morning's discussion. Some of the insightful things, obviously, is as we always do, we start off with the international segment and flowing from there, we roll in to the local news segment in that particular order. Stay tuned for the rest of the programming here on the Early Morning Scoop. We're back right after this.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back there, right there from the quick break and stepping as promised immediately into the discussion coming through from around the world. Primarily, we're going to first be focused on an African discussion. This is obviously as the developments have popped up over this past weekend, wherein Nigeria has been threatened by US President Donald Trump with military intervention if Nigeria does not take the necessary steps to protect Christian lives in its country. Now, this is as developments obviously have sprung up after that Truth Social post by Donald Trump over the weekend. And this is as Nigerians find themselves having to ask the question, but primarily, you know, what do they actually think of this kind of noise that have been made? Now, this is as the particular Nigerian government had cited and reacted to this particular firebrand social media post from the US president, who threatened to send troops into Africa's most populous nation by using the term guns a-blazing. He's accused the Nigerian government of failing to protect Christians without naming specific incidents, and Nigeria's government says that jihadist violence affects all faiths, and it insists the country is religiously tolerant. Let's have a listen to this report.
Nation, quote, guns a-blazing. Now, he's accused the Nigerian government of failing to protect Christians without naming specific incidents. Nigeria's government says jihadist violence affects all faiths and insists the country is religiously tolerant.
In June this year, up to 200 people were killed when gunmen stormed a Christian farming community in Nigeria's Middle Belt, where the majority Muslim north meets the largely Christian south. That attack came almost exactly 3 years after a brutal bombing and shooting at a church in the southwest of the country left dozens of worshippers dead. A number of terror attacks have targeted Nigeria's Christian community over the past few years. Advocacy groups say the government has denied the severity of attacks on Christians, though groups monitoring violence say there's no evidence to suggest Christians are being killed more than Muslims. Now the United States has gone further, accusing the government in Abuja of allowing a genocide against Christians. On Saturday, President Donald Trump threatened to cut aid to Nigeria and potentially stage a military intervention if the killings do not stop. Nigeria's foreign ministry has strongly refuted the allegations. In a statement, it said the government would continue to defend all citizens, irrespective of race, creed, and religion. Some Nigerians have welcomed Trump's threat of intervention.
So Christians are not being scared to move about. Christians are scared to worship freely. The priests, the leaders, I mean the seminarians and all that. So things need to be done. It's bad.
And we don't mind if the U.S. Army could take charge. At least peace will reign. If that will bring solution to Nigeria at a whole, then we are good to go.
Others who DW spoke to said they thought U.S. military action could potentially stoke more ethnic tensions.
We've seen situations where the United States have helped countries, in quotes, to solve their issues, and they left it worse than it was.
Some Muslims are real Muslims and some are just covering up as a Muslim, and they are terrorists. So what if you say you want to come over here and tackle terrorism, and at the end of the day you started attacking all Muslims?
Nigeria's Islamist insurgency has dragged on for over 15 years. Analysts say while Christians have been killed, most of the victims have been Muslims in the country's northeast. They also say many of the conflicts are driven by many factors other than religious hatred, such as land disputes between Christian farmers and Muslim herders.
And for more, I'm joined by Dr. Kabir Adamu. He's a security analyst and managing director at Beacon Consulting. That's a security risk solutions provider in Nigeria and the Sahel region. And he joins us from Abuja in Nigeria. So very good to have you with us. So please,
Thank you.
I mean, try and explain to us. Nigeria has been struggling with complex security problems, and that for a long time. What factors are at play there?
So mainly environmental factors, political factors, social factors, economic factors, especially the resource dispute. Land is one of them, and several other components of that resource dispute. The mining, minerals in particular, are also another one. Now, added to that is the geopolitical element, where you have especially the two global jihadist franchises, Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, that through the porous borders also influence security factors in Nigeria.
Mm. So there are quite a few challenges that you mentioned, but why is it so challenging for the Nigerian security apparatus to deal with the threat of Islamist terrorism, especially the Islamist group Boko Haram that's been targeting Christians for quite some time now?
So I think the narrative that the Islamic State in West Africa province, or the Jamaat al-Ahl-Sinna lil-Dawati wal-Jihad, or in fact three other terror groups that exist in Nigeria are specifically targeting Christians, is wrong. There is enough evidence that shows they are also targeting Muslims. When last I checked my records, there are about 300 incidents of specific targeting of mosques, bombings in Kano, killings of Muslims in their mosques in Zamfara, in Katsina. Like I said, 300 incidents. So I think it's important that that narrative is discounted. Beyond that, which is the, you know, body of your question, why have Nigerian security forces failed to deal with them? The reasons are complex. One, equipment deficit, then even the nature of the insurgency. It is one that is modern. They are embedded within the people. They've not, the Nigerian state has not been able to win the hearts and minds of the people to enable enough support to do that. And then, of course, like I mentioned, the geopolitical element, a significant equipment.
Great
that
news.
Jihadist
just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
We continue on with the report where we left off.
Groups are using is coming in from across the borders, and there is also a you know, the theory that perhaps even the USAID, which was funded by United States government, supported the insurgency in one way or the other. So it's multidimensional.
I mean, we now know that the U.S. president has threatened on social media that the U.S. would intervene in order to protect the Christians. What would happen if the U.S. military was to invade or have a little, I don't know, some sort of military action there in Nigeria? What would that mean for the country and for the Nigerians?
First off, I mean, we're in a rule-based system. Nigeria is a sovereign state. Another state cannot threaten to attack Nigeria in a rule-based system. And I think there is enough diplomatic platforms for Nigeria to appeal to follow, to ensure that that doesn't happen. But we've seen what has happened in other locations. So I guess Nigeria should take the threat seriously. Now, what is likely to happen? We can look at the report released by the United States Commission for Religious, International Religious Freedom, USCRIF, in July 2025, when it stated that the two threat elements that are preventing religious freedom are so-called Fulani extremists or militias, and then, of course, the terror groups like the Jamaat al-Sunnah and the Islamic State in West Africa province. So one would presume that if the United States does attack, those are the two groups. But this is the difficulty. Isolating these two groups is almost impossible. Both groups live together with the communities that they are attacking. And so what could likely happen, especially since we've seen significant profiling, ethnic profiling, as well as stigmatization of the Fulani community, and just for the purpose of the listener, we're talking of about 10 million, a population of about 10 million, when only about 100,000 of them or thereabout are the militants or the extremist ones. So how do you isolate this 100,000 right from the rest of the over 9 million? So this is the challenge. If the U.S. attacks, this is what it's likely to target. And it would be unfortunate because it would mean killing innocent people who are probably victims of the same criminality that you're complaining about.
All right. Well, Dr. Kabir Adamu from Beacon Consulting in Abuja in Nigeria. Dr. Adamu, thank you so very much for that.
Well, from Abidjan, we're now joined by Azizat Aluwaluwa, DW's West Africa correspondent. Now, how is Nigeria's government reacting to this statement from Trump?
Thank you very much. There have been multiple reactions from the officials of Nigeria. President Bola Tinubu reacted yesterday, saying that specifically saying Christians are the most targeted with the insecurity issue in the country doesn't reflect the national reality of Nigerians. And there are multiple government officials as well saying there seem to be some sort of agenda for some people trying to say only Christians are targeted, and that that Christians are not proportionally targeted in these attacks because Muslims are the most affected. And researchers that have looked into violence incidents in Nigeria have also said the same thing, that no religious faith or nobody according to their religious faith are specifically being targeted. So there is no form of truth saying that there is a genocide of Christians in Nigeria.
Now, Trump also has accused Nigeria of not doing enough to prevent the killings. What could the government do for the security of its citizens?
Well, many have said that Nigerian governments in the past years have not really done enough that it should have done to quell this insecurity that has now snowballed into something that they perhaps cannot handle by themselves alone. And that's why President Bola Tinubu has said that he is ready to work with the U.S. and any other country that wants to support them in tackling this security situation. Many have criticized the government, saying that when Boko Haram started about 15 years ago, they should have done something that would nip this insecurity issue in the bud. Now there have been emergence of quite a number of criminal gangs in north central Nigeria, northeast Nigeria, and even the south region of the country. So now they are saying the authorities, perhaps by the criticism from the U.S. President Donald Trump, Nigerian authorities will be forced to act decisively and end the insecurity problem in the country.
Standing on that specific report right there, we still stay on the African continent, and this is as the African hosting of the G20 summit will take place. Now, this is as the Department of International Relations in South Africa is hosting the G20 Presidency Outreach Program in Abuja, Nigeria. Now, this will also be the first time that Africa is hosting the G20, and this comes at a time when the AU is now a full member of the G20. Collective. Now we have a listen specifically to this report.
In South Africa, the Department of International Relations is hosting the G20 Presidency Outreach Program in Abuja in Nigeria. Now this will be the first time Africa is hosting the G20. This comes at a time where the AU is now a full member of G20. For more, we cross now live to DIRCO Acting Chief Director for Regional Organizations, Ben Joubert in Abuja. A very good evening to you, sir, and thank you so much for your time. So how important then is this meeting in Abuja? I mean, what does this mean for Africa's influence on global decision making? And how does, more importantly, South Africa's presidency ensure that this becomes not just a G20 on African soil, but a truly African G20.
Yes, thank you very much and good evening to everyone. Yes, of course, this is very important from a substantive point of view and also in terms of our President Cyril Ramaphosa's original commitment to Africa when we first announced that we will host the G20 summit of leaders for the first time on the African continent. So both in terms of that promise and in terms of the issues that we will discuss today here in, that we will discuss in the event tomorrow, on industrialization, on agriculture, those issues are extremely important to us. As you would know, one of the high level, deliverables that we have in our G20 presidency speaks to the issue of food security. So this links in very closely to the issues that are dear to the continent, to Africa, food security, sustainable finance or debt sustainability. All those issues are important. And this outreach to Abuja, to Nigeria, as an invited country during our G20 presidency is therefore extremely important to us.
Yeah, I would imagine. I want to just touch on the geopolitics that we're seeing. I mean, there are reports now that the United States has not endorsed several of the resolutions emerging from the G20 working groups. How significant do you think that is, the lack of consensus, and does it risk undermining the unity of, purpose South Africa is trying to build? I would imagine that also, just on another point, that as DIRCO, just speaking about the United States, you're also monitoring reports that the U.S. has, threatened possible military action amid ongoing tensions and violence on the religion front in Nigeria.
Yes, I think the presidency that we are having this year, or that we are holding of the G20, is of course during a time of significant geopolitical shifts and challenges. For us, that is of course nothing new, given how we worked on our democracy in the early 90s. So in this year, I think South Africa is the ideal country to be presiding over the G20 group. That said, we are very committed to a ambitious document. We are very committed to a successful leader summit, and we are working extremely hard to get the US completely on board of our presidency. So there's a lot of work taking place. The G20 and many other regional blocs and formations of the world are, of course, much bigger than one country alone. So this is hard work for us, and we remain very committed and very positive about an ambitious document in the summit coming up, and of course the successful and constructive support and participation of the US amongst the other G20 members.
All right, Mr. Jubelis.
That does bring us up to the end of the international segment, and specifically, dear listeners, we'll quickly take a short break and we'll come back right after this, heading into the local news segment here on this morning session of the Early Morning Scoop.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism. Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye. The eye.
Now coming back there, dear listeners, and as we're about, 25 minutes out from 6:30, heading into the local news segment here on your Early Morning Scoop, and ultimately getting into some of the particular talking points that we will be looking at on this morning's session. Now, do remember that you can also, during the course of the discussion, but only after the particular reports and the discussions have been held, you can come through, give us a call, engage with us about some of the particular subject matter, as well as also give you particular insights on some of the talking points emanating from this. We'll also be having a look specifically at the Village ePaper platform's Monday headlines, as well as also what came in from them. And that's specifically in terms of what you can expect if you are part of our subscription process here at in terms of the Villager, and its insightful analysis and, well, some of the knowledge contained within the particular e-paper platform. Now, starting off with this morning's, one of the first particular items on this morning's local news segment and the particular talking points that come from it is that executive directors from across the government's ministries, agencies and offices met for a breakfast engagement with the National Institute for Public Administration and Management, that being NIPAM, on the various developmental programs that the Institute has and offers towards the public service in order to maintain the capacity levels of all public and civil servants in the country. This particular engagement also factored in as a chance for the directors and NIPAM to understand the issues that are plaguing the public service on all facets of the country, as this includes also regional authorities as well as also local authorities, and even the councillors that get elected into these particular instances across the country. Now, the manager for strategy, organizational performance and business process for NIPAM, that being Sankwasa Mubita, outlined the various courses that help the public servants address their needs for roles and the challenges that are discovered to arise in the public sector, or that arise in the public sector due to untrained staff who are promoted and given new roles. We have a listen to what he adds here.
That is very necessary for us to achieve the outcome that we desire. We have a supervisory development program. This is important. Italy is one level that can make an AD ego fail is this one. If we do not have supervisors that make sure that the lower level, the operational staff, do something, we are likely not to succeed. This is important as supervisors, or this development program is important, because here people were just from the operation, they become supervisors, and they have no acknowledgement of supervision. There is self-style leadership here, management here. I have been just whatever as a clerk. Now I'm the senior clerk. What do you expect me to do when I don't forgive?
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get 4 kg Cadilla mixed chicken for $189.99. 1 kg Pasta Grande spaghetti for $19.99. 750 gram Nola mayo for just $37.99. And 2 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for only $52.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Expect me to do. When I don't forgive, then you think I'm incompetent. I have not been exposed to supervisory. No tools to monitor anything, nothing. So I just start coming to office punctual so that you like me. It is important that we introduce our people to a supervisory program.
Now, still continuing on the aspects of the ability of the modern public servant to understand the financial statements of the public sector, Mubita also added that the problems have been observed where public servants are inadequately trained for the roles that they fill. Now, these also include the supervisors of the various functionaries of the state, and that in many cases, the need is never addressed with the appropriate training being applied where necessary. We have a listen to what he further added.
Of us are lawyers, and now finance is a challenge. Human resource management is a challenge. So this program have these components, cover all these other components to make sure that we have a holistic leader who can read a financial statement. Because it's very possible that a very competent doctor is appointed, but he has no ability to read the financial statement. Exposure to this program would help us be able to read our financial statements for those that come from different fields. So is senior management, and so is our middle managers. Programs. In terms of other programs that NIPAM offers, NIPAM offers some governance training programs, and we do governance, board induction, corporate governance, board effectiveness, council development programs, standing rules and orders for regional councils. I think there ought to be something that we do about some of the programs, especially board. Also, counselor, for effectiveness of governance. Because, you know, here, because I know counselors here, we can talk about this one. You know, counselors, when they are elected to positions, they simply overnight move from wherever they were doing and become counselors. You tell them to come to NIPAM for training on the counselor development programs, maybe there is a feeling as if you are making them, you are lowering them to come and do these programs. But then it takes them very long to understand, including their act, because they have to do it by trial and error, whereas they could have been introduced holistically to the act. And then they go fight with their CROs and CEOs because they do not appreciate the line between management and political leaders. So it
it's something that we should probably look at, making some of these things compulsory for people to, if you are to serve as a board, you should at least go through a board induction. If you have to be a councillor, please, if you are a parliamentarian, something in that line so that we can trust our leaders that they will govern us properly. In under leadership and management program, we have leadership and change management, strategic management, emotional intelligence, mentoring and coaching, innovativity, knowledge management, procurement management, public policy development. That's a sample among those. Then under human resource, we have performance management, disciplinary procedures, talent management, industrial labor relations management, learning and development, train the trainer and wellness community programs. And for regional and local government, we have council meeting management, community development, community participation, formulating administrative policy, environmental management.
Now, the head of the Public Service Commission, that being Mr. Salman Jacobs, also indicated at the particular engagement that human resources officers and staff are the most critical officials to approach for the rolling out of training programs and upskilling initiatives, as they are at the forefront of these various offices, ministries and agencies, who can precisely identify the needs that come about their stations. We take a listen to what he added.
I also wanted to express my appreciation for being invited to this very important, definitely addressing some of the pertinent issues we have as challenges within the HR area. I think the importance of human resource is something that we all are emphasizing in whatever we say. HR is the backbone, is the core of any institution. You go to any institution, either people skilled, highly competent, and so that institution will not function. So the core people are a core individual that you require in any institution are the HR people. And if they are not properly resourced, that may also reflect in other aspects of how you want to strengthen that institution. In many institutions, they will talk about, fiscal discipline, prudence of how financial services are handled in that particular institution. And they may be rated based on how accurate they are, or how good controls they have around finances. But who does that work? It's the human resource, it's the HR people, or it's the people, the human resource that is doing the work. Therefore, the importance of HR people we cannot underestimate. NIPAM, I think, was established for that purpose. And I want our EDs to get this through, to say that yes, we as the accounting officers must emphasize that HR people that are working for us must be properly trained, retrained, and continuously capacitated. You know, we always hear that when austerity measures are looking, the first to be cut is the training budget. The people that are trained, the human resource, are the ones to suffer first. And I think it is for the accounting officers to look at this and to say that I think it is important for me to continuously train my people, find different ways. And different ways, some of the ways are when you benchmark and also, collaborate with other institutions in the world, you may find that there are a lot of training programs out there where, as NIPAM, first of all, NIPAM can collaborate with them. Our EDs can also, either through NIPAM or through their own OMAS and RCs, get in touch with these institutions, because what is offered out there could be of benefit to our service delivery down here. So I think the importance of the EDs and the HR offices to come together, just like the EDs and the finance offices are working closely in order to bring that fiscal discipline within their offices and institutions. The same must apply when it comes to HR issues. Important thing is, which was mentioned, was somebody mentioned about consequence management. And I think this is one thing that maybe our Secretary of Cabinet will at some point in time look at. When there is a disciplinary issue, misconduct and others, sometimes the culprit may be the supervisor or the ED or whatever, but the person that suffers are the victim, the one down. All this are happening because of the type of training, very probably, which people have. Maybe if they are properly trained and know what they need to do, they will be better and sound working environment. So training cannot be overemphasized. It is important. It must be consistently and continuously applied. We talk about controls. We know how private sector controls each and every aspect of their offices. And public service must start looking in that direction. I think we are doing pockets here and there, controls around how people enter, how they go out, how they are recruited into the system, how do we capture the details of people. So I think automation, the IT, is very important for us to embrace as public service. Automation, we cannot go wrong. That is actually everybody's moving in that direction. But where we are recruiting nowadays, you know, people, that's not how it is supposed to be. Things must come online, people must be recruited, people's documents must be captured in a safe, secure folder where they know that when I leave, all my documents are there. Nowadays, when people leave, I don't see your performance, your probation was never done, and it becomes a problem for you that is now leaving. So I think automation is the way to go, and I think we all must start thinking along those lines. I think there was a suggestion from NIPAM last.
Now, just ending specifically on that note as well, then the NIPAM Executive Director, Mr. Harold Mrangi, explained that there are various approaches to the training needs that would be required for the to be rolled out in the coming year, as well as also for the various offices, and cited that there are also stakeholders who do not wish to partake in the necessary processes for training and understanding the roles that they occupy in regards to serving the public. We have a listen to what he added.
I think we have taken note of what the last speakers have said, and especially with regard to HR. I think the message is very clear and it's very loud. And I appreciate the EDs who are here, or those who have sent representatives, because the biggest challenge that we have in this country is non-responsiveness to issues. I'm writing letters to EDs. Sometimes they no single acknowledgement. And I have started another approach now. If I want to implement what you're suggesting for us to get the HR people here, I'll work through the Secretary of Cabinet so that people are instructed. Otherwise, we'll not be able to see the impact. It does not have any purpose that we invite the HR people so that we can strategize together and see how can we improve the system, but you have only 10% representation. So I think that is an issue that we'll take forward. We are taking care of all the recommendations that have been expressed here. But two things that I want to three things. Number one, we'll start with public seminars. And I'm going to use the EDs to deliver the seminars so that we tell the good stories that we do within the ministry to the nation. We are going to start with one within the next 2 weeks. We are going to use one of the public enterprises. But come next year, we want to engage the EDs. Ministry of Information and Madam Nakali will get you. You come and talk about cybersecurity and we get people connected. That's the one activity that we are planning to have throughout. That would rather just listen to me and implement. We have another item coming up during the last month of November. The biggest challenge that we have local authorities, village councils. Last week I sent Rebecca to Omaheke for stakeholders engagement. She was at Kobabes municipality. There is no strategic plan, nothing. People go to office, there is no annual plan. People go to office to work, or they go to office to get a salary. From there she proceeded to Ochinene Village Council. There is nothing. But we expect to improve service delivery. So we know the challenges within local authorities and village councils. We want to launch what we call Prime Minister's Charity Foundation. That is a fundraising activity. We'll send the letter to the EDs. Unfortunately, it's coming at a cost because we need to generate funds. So that come next year, we try to get some local authorities together and assist them developing their strategic plan. Those having the plans, aligning their plans to NDB 6 at no cost. Maybe they can cover the cost for their accommodation. So that is a very important event that is coming up during the last, I think, what is the date? 28th November. It will be facilitated by our Prime Minister, because, and that will be an annual event so that we can support those who are unable to help themselves. Finally, next year, we are trying to get all the school of governments in Africa here for a conference. And I think it's important, we are going to send the call for papers very soon. It's important for us as employees of the public sectors to get involved and present papers so that we can learn from the best practices. So those invitations will also follow. So these are the critical interventions that we...
Coming back there from that particular aspect, as well as also taking a look in terms of the developers that have popped up. We quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and we come back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere urikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihoetike kovano ile koshiwana. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. nuneudo o tukwetera o special ngeta chake ngeje pa o marudi dayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nokumona o ijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM bye.
Come back there from the quick extended break right there, and specifically getting back to where we left off. But before that, just to let you know, dear listeners, you are listening to the Early Morning Scoop here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And primarily, we get into the next particular talking point. Yes, it does bring us into an entrepreneurial aspect as well, and does also highlight certain particular developments that pop up from this. Now, this is as I recently, yes, me, Dwight, recently paid a visit to a school, local school here in Windhoek. The school's name is the Waldorf School. And coincidentally, guys, just to sort of like give you a little bit of a short story behind it, I, you know, while conversing with the people, because I went there on invite or invitation by one of the parents who wanted to share primarily the particular skills development as well as also aspect regarding skills development partnership partnered up with entrepreneurial skills. Now, at the school itself, they are currently training the next generation of Namibians to be able to approach the world with skills that they have been equipped with in their 5 years on the secondary school platform. At this particular level, I assumed that the particular school itself was part of the Montessori method. If you don't know what the difference of the Montessori method is and what technically is taught at these schools by the same name of Waldorf, they teach the Steiner method. And these particular two methods are technically based upon exploring and interacting with the various particular, you know, skills as well as also what you're comfortable with as a child or as a teenager. Now, we spoke to the teacher and the project manager, Margaret Nurukom, about why this came about and what was the need to do so. Now, the training forms part of the basic vocational training that the learners receive and that they are exposed to in terms of the real-world sales environments wherein they actually learn to interact with clients who buy their wooden crafts and also have the opportunity of understanding money and the value of their work. We take a particular lesson to this engagement, specifically where we sat down with Nurukom and asked her in terms of, you know, why this happened. After that, you'll also hear the interactions with two of the learners, one boy, one girl, in terms of what they feel, as well as also how they, you know, see the particular comparison between theoretical schoolwork and a partnership between skills development as well as also trying to understand what you're comfortable with on the level of the secondary level itself. We have a listen to this.
Yes. So firstly, good afternoon. My name is Margaret Nurukom. I am the project manager of Woody's Creation, so which is this project. So Woody's Creation stems from the Waldorf School. It's almost like a branch of the Waldorf School. So at Waldorf School, I believe from the sixth grade, woodwork is already taught to the kids. So it's the basics, the basic woodwork, the basic tools, how to operate it, the small machinery. And then from there, as obviously as they grow older, it advances. Same with the projects with the skills as well. And BVET stands for Basic Vocational Training. So the school had office administration, they had agriculture, electricity, woodwork, hospitality. So with this, it somehow integrates into the Woody's Creations, especially the woodwork, of course. But especially the office admin as well, it plays a crucial role for this, because obviously there's the skill side and then there's the theory side as well, with the same with any business. So with Woody's Creation, it was very crucial. So I'm going to tell the story of how it started. started, yeah. So it makes sense. So my best friend Arisha and I, together in 2020, we were bored, it was COVID, you didn't know what to do, income was low. So we thought, hey, how can we keep ourselves busy? So we started producing the products. So in the beginning, it was mainly the brushes and the boards, because that's how it started in primary school. So we had the skills and we thought, how can we make a product or turn it into something? And that's what we did. So we started, and then we used to speak to the teachers a lot and think, what can we do? So they proposed to us the green market. So the green market is across Wilde End in Kleinwinter. So we started with a small stall there. So we took the brushes we made and we were able to sell it there. That's how it started 6 years ago. From there we've migrated. We had over 20 learners in our project as well. We don't only take learners from the school, we take them from outside as well. So we somehow build a bridge as well. So a lot of the learners we'd work with from outside with disadvantage, a lot of them didn't finish school, didn't see a future, but then we somehow just try to give them hope, yeah, while working and teaching them the skills as well. So we work with... Let me use my hands instead. So it was the change of attitude, but COVID let me do it. I'm not sure it was out COVID if I would have done any woodwork. Mm. So it was the change. So now when I see when learners, other learners come to the school and they have the same difficulties, attitude, I just explain to them how the change of attitude, and I think it's something that it's everywhere in life, regardless of in what field you work, if you don't change your attitude towards it, it wouldn't work. Just an example, the school had German as one of the subjects. I used to fight the German. I used to fight it, and now I regret that now I have to do Duolingo for it, but it doesn't work still. But I wish I had a different attitude then. So this is one of the things I'm trying to implement. The change in attitude, seeing the silver lining. So that's what I do with them, and I try to do with them. And that's why we also have learners leadership. It's just a branch also of this, where we talk to the learners, have them involved. We do a lot of outside projects just to build the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why am I saying it right?
Okay. So, but if we also now, if we now head into the particular, the aim, mm-hmm, obviously, of the skills sets, in the Namibian context, there is now this major discussion, children need to be empowered with something.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you yourself, you see now how that adjustment, the attitude works to achieve something itself.
Yeah.
Some of the particular talking points has been, for example, the two learners, Chrisley and David, have cited that some of the works that are produced here, you guys are able to sell some of it.
Yes.
How has that come about? Mm-hmm. Specifically also, what does it teach the learners? Is it something purely where the sales help the school, mm-hmm, or does it help specifically to show the learners, hey, listen, you can actually know about value, mm-hmm, in terms of what you make and the price you can charge.
Exactly.
So how does that particular learning curve work there?
I love how you phrased it. You make it sound so smart. But that is how it works. So let me say, when you start with the production of a product,
yeah,
the learners put their initials on. So let me say, if you don't put your best into it, if you don't focus, you can see the difference in the products. Of course, I think with everything, it's like that.
Mm.
So when a learner actually cares about the product, you can see. So when your initials are on, when sales happen, your initials are still on.
Mm.
So then we see who sells more. And of course, that also reflects. So I try to make it so they could mirror it.
Yeah.
So if you do a good job, you're going to get paid for it and you're going to get a certain amount. But if you don't, no one's going to buy it. So just to also add that pride in their work also.
Mm.
So the income that comes from there is what generates it. Like the learner's company stands on its own,
mm,
financially. It is connected to the school, but we try to fund our own projects. You know, I'm trying to teach them that you could do it yourself. So we fund our own projects. If we have an idea to go somewhere, do something, we have that freedom because of the work we do.
Mm.
A certain percentage of sale goes to the individual learners for the individual work they do. And then from there, a certain amount goes to the school as well. And then we're able to somehow generate it.
Mm.
So it keeps going. It's a cycle. Hopefully it doesn't die out. In where we take learners from outside as well. Of course, if you look at it, it has to be transportation. You have to cover meals. Mm. You take them from outside as well.
Mm.
So we just try to cover those things. And the nice thing is we're still afloat. I think it's our quality speaks for itself.
Mm.
We're still afloat. We're still able to do it. We're still able to bring in learners, and that's what's most important.
Mm.
But also that they see and feel valued as well. So they're able to, like I said, the vocational training, that's where this plays a role. So we did office and admin, so you have an idea, marketing, how to do it, who's your audience, all of the small things, somehow with this one brush. So when a learner makes it, I think, who would sell your brush? Who would buy your brush? Who would you sell it to? At what price? Does it make sense? Would you buy it? These who, what, those questions is... We're starting now with them. So in grade 8 already, a learner thinks like this. Okay, if I make 5 brushes this week, I get a certain amount. Just to the mindset. So it's not just theory. I think it's important. Like when I was writing exam NSSC, it was very important for me to have a balance. So I would do theories, exams, but the mind, we'd overwork it in a certain way. We're not computers. So when you come here, you somehow work with your hands. And that's what the Wild of Pedagogy is about, the hands, the heart working together, which is important, I think. Because in today's world, especially in Namibia, if you can just learn to think a bit differently, I think you'll go far.
Just specifically on the learner's company, what did you guys feel to firstly set up that vehicle? Because in many cases, some parents would just argue, you know, let's just let them express themselves. So why did you guys decide to follow, to put up something that represents their efforts, but also has the opportunity to collect revenue from those efforts? And then the second question behind that is, was it a purposeful, if I can call it like a strategy, to say rather, let's try and see how real life reacts to what you guys make, versus making things just for school projects? What were these two scenarios like?
I believe COVID was just a jump. You know, we just had to jump. We made the products. I mean, we saw from demand what to make. So it doesn't help we make certain products. Like, for example, a shop has to have bread. Like, that's us.
Großartige Neuigkeiten. Imba ist jetzt noch besser geworden. Wir haben brandneue Funktionen hinzugefügt, um dein Erlebnis noch reibungsloser, schneller und leistungsstärker zu machen als je zuvor. Bereit, das volle Potenzial von Imba freizuschalten? Erhalte alle exklusiven Funktionen für nur 36 Namibia-Dollar pro Monat. Oder spare noch mehr mit unseren speziellen Abonnementplänen. 5% Rabatt bei einem 3-Monats-Abonnement, 10% Rabatt bei einem 6-Monats-Abonnement oder 25% Rabatt bei einem 12-Monats-Abonnement. Wähle den Plan, der am besten zu dir passt und genieße alles, was Imba zu bieten hat, zu einem unschlagbaren Preis. Imba, where the world congregates. Lade es herunter und abonniere noch heute.
Products, like for example, a shop has to have bread. Like, that's us, we have to have brush and boards. We could have additional other things like sweets and whatever, but the crucial things that make us us. So it's somehow branding, and because branding and marketing, they come hand in hand. So we built a certain market, a certain audience, so we have to be able to accommodate them. So when it's just school projects, the quality as well may not be for selling, but that's where we initially start. Like the first one you do, you keep, or it's for the school. But from there, it has to generate because it has to come from somewhere. Now you learn the skill of making a brush, but the materials and the cost involved. So the first one is just us investing in the idea. But from the second one, it has to generate some sort of income for the cycle to continue. And that's where we saw that. With COVID, it was because we didn't have any experience in the line, technically, like in the outside world, we just had to learn. So luckily, the two of us were able to, and now we give it over. We do the first one. So that's why I try to go out with the learners as well. Like, you sell your product. And the reactions they get and all of that, it is a harsh world. But
so,
they learn.
So it's for them also to be able to answer questions when the client asks something.
Exactly, very important. Because what kind of hair is it? Where did you get it? Somehow they also learn the skill of socializing as well. A lot of them are shy at first, but I put them there, I put them in front. It's one of the steps you have to go through with me. So there's the technical side, the theory side, and there's the other side.
The experience side.
The experience side. Like my best friend and I, she was the hands and I was the brain, that's what we said. So she would produce more and I would do the socializing more. But now that she's not there, we try to do both.
And then just the question specifically on the strategy of putting up the creating this business. Was it purposeful, or was it scenario of we need something that engages between the outside for the students and that the students understand that they are working towards a common goal? Was that a clear strategy, or was it like you said, COVID taught us a few lessons?
It was an not an accident, but it wasn't purpose. Like, that wasn't the goal. The goal was to keep ourselves busy and, of course, generate income. And when we saw the demand grew, we were able to recruit more and work more towards to play in this when we started setting goals. But I believe when we started, we just wanted to generate income. That was the main thing. We thought it's, we do it twice. If we make 5 brushes twice, it's enough for us for the holiday. But it grew. The orders grew, the demand grew, and they forced us to somehow get into this routine and stick with it.
Yeah. Just on a last question of if we just look at who buys what the students make, is it local or is it international?
I would say it's both. So there's, of course, locally you find small international groups. And let me say the foreigners, the non-Namibians, are more invested, or maybe they understand it more, should I say? Is it safe to say that? They understand the products more. Like the brushes that are handmade and how you go through it. As Namibians, majority of us are used to plastic. We'd rather go with plastic, the cheaper thing. Can I say that?
No, it's
can
100%.
I say the Germans appreciate more the natural wooden?
Yeah.
There's another crowd that appreciates it more. Hopefully, the goal is that it grows, that more locals are interested in this product. But even if you look at our price range, it's more accommodating to the foreigners. But if you look at the material we use as well. So therefore, when we get to a point where we can get, for example, the hair locally, we can adjust our prices as well to accommodate the locals as well. We're not there yet, but it is a goal that we have more of our locals supporting us. For now, it's more the foreigners.
Even here, when they buy locally, it's more the foreigners.
More the foreigners, the tourists.
Yeah,
they come, they buy in bulk. That's a nice thing for taking home for gifts. For one of our main sources of income is the craft center, and I believe that's mainly tourists. Yeah, so that is our mainly tourists, but we hope to change that.
All right. And then just on my last question specifically is, Margaret, if we're looking at this particular discussion, I don't want to put competition in the side, but is there growing demand from the learners to learn and to see this life experience that you just explained? Or do they also see, you know, other potential avenues in the electrical work and the other particular skill sets? Is the woodwork sort of like going to be the shining beacon, or does it look like the shining beacon, or are you hoping that it will be?
I believe it is the shining beacon, but I think learners, students, they lose interest very fast. So you have to do things to keep them engaged. And I believe when it comes to the vocational training and the competition, I believe we're leading, because we try to keep them very involved. Students are interested for the first month and they're out. But you have to be consistent with them, give them a sort of structure. Like the ones that live in the hostel, I go get them. Like I physically go up, we could knock at their doors and go get them, just to keep them engaged, because as I said, students don't always know what they want. So it's good to not somehow force them, but make it mandatory to complete 1 year. You can't just start and then just stop. You have to be consistent so that they get the habit, so that they see in the future they might not want to do a job, but they have to look for the silver lining and keep pushing. That is what I'm trying to teach them. And I think, not to brag, but in the vocational field, I believe we're doing very well, especially with the connection with the outside. If you see it in its practical, you see it practically, you see it, it's outside, it's happening, whereas I believe the other vocational sectors plan to do it. They're looking forward to do it. They're working. They're teaching the kids now so that they can do it in the future. Whereas we have already found a way to implement it, the real life part.
100%.
Yes.
On your side specifically, if there's anything that I did not ask that you want to still add into the talk, you can still do so. Or if Francois still wants to ask a question.
I just have 2 points that I'd like to put your word on.
Now, also getting an indication specifically from one of the learners itself, that being David, not identifying his full name, primarily because he's still underage, but just asking him in terms of the discussion between what he feels in terms of or his experiences, as well as also being able to make crafts by hand versus the conventional education landscape that most of us have been exposed to, specifically if you come from a public school scenario, whereas wherein a lot of theoretical exposure is the main particular format of training. Let's have a listen to what he added.
David, thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and specifically about, you know, telling us in terms of the skills that you've been exposed to as now being a grade 10 learner, as well as also your previous experience in primary school in a government school setting versus now what you see here, specifically what you're being taught and the skills that you're now getting. If I have to ask you for that comparison, what have you seen? How has it developed into the skills that you've now acquired? And then what do you see primarily in terms of the new knowledge that you've gained?
David, Retain. I would say when I was in primary school, my main focus was on academics, and the school where I attended, we were known for holding a high standard of education. So I would say through my primary attendance, I mostly focused on academics. But when I came to high school, which is also a private school, things changed a bit, and I would say since coming into a private school and high school, I had more experience in physical education and academics. So
they sometimes also call it like vocational education, right?
Vocational education. So I would say I think it's good to have both skills, but for me, I would prefer academics a bit more. But at this point, I'm not really getting academics that more. I'm still a lot on vocational education.
And if we look at the vocational training you have been exposed to specifically, what have you learned so far?
I've learned like, a few different fields such as hospitality, woodwork, computers, and garden. For me, I would say woodwork stands out because when I came here, when I came to the school, I was new and didn't know much. And I feel like it's something that I found comfort in, something that I enjoyed doing. So I would say I really enjoyed doing woodwork, and it's probably what I invested in the most is coming here as a vocational.
If you also look at the other skill sets like the hospitality, the computer with the electrical, or is it separate?
It's separate.
Okay, so it was together at one stage. If you had to look at those particular things, do you see it potentially as a skill that you can take after school when you finish, like say, grade 11, grade 12? Do you guys have grade 12?
Yeah.
After grade 12, do you see it as a skill set that you can take in, for example, something that you can live off, make money from?
I would really say yes.
No, can you say also no?
No, can I say no?
Yeah.
It's like a two-way thing, so I'm not really sure.
But with woodwork you're now busy with, are you making a variety of items, or is it just one specific kind of item that you make?
So we make a variety. We like to try new stuff. So we don't really only focus on one thing, but we do almost all kinds of things that we can make out of wood.
Specifically, I hear that you guys love making brushes. Has there also been a scenario in terms of that you can potentially sell these brushes specifically?
Yeah, we do sell them. We sell them to locals mostly, but sometimes we also take them outside the country. We have like permanent selling spots like at the Norwegian Craft Center here in Windhoek. And we also get orders. So like we mainly to make them to sell them.
Alright, that's good. And how do you feel specifically if you guys hear that your brushes are being bought? How does that make you feel?
I would say it's a good feeling. It's motivation to do more, explore more. Yeah,
100%. David, if there's still something that you wanted to add that I might not have answered or might not have asked, you can still do so.
Maybe it would have been nice to had to have academics at this school from, let's say, from grade 9 to like really get enough time to focus for your final examinations, because I feel like when you reach high school, you're not really doing much in grade 10, but then you only want to start doing things in grade 11. I don't think that's enough time over the 2-year course to finish your curriculum or syllabus.
Now, that ultimately does finish the sort of like the spotlighting we did on that particular conversation for this morning's edition of the Early Morning Scoop. We will, just after a short break, which is about to creep up on us, cite and engage in terms of analyzing the particular talking point that stems from this engagement. On that, we'll be back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, coming back there from the quick break, dear listeners, we get into a analytical discussion based upon this particular template and this example in terms of, is it a best way in terms of incorporating basic skills development and training on high schools in order to empower children a lot better, specifically when they have to approach the broader world. But before that, we've got a short ad break.
Great news! IMPA just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USAID? 400 milliliter Dawn hand and body lotion or cream, just $29.99. 350 milliliter trusted palm olive shampoo and conditioner, just $38.99 each. Lovey's premium disposable nappies, $133.99. Any 2 1-kilogram bags Sunlight 5-in-1 hand washing powder, just $58. Save $2. You save, I save, we all save at USAID.
As we head to the polls on 26 November 2025 to elect our representatives as regional and local authority councillors, you have to be present to be represented. Your voice can only count if you put it in the ballot box. Get involved. Put your voice in the box.
Back there from the quick break, dear listeners, and just where we left off before it, we speak to Mr. Danny Mayer from the SME Compete, who helps us understand the particular importance of this early exposure and skills development program for the need to develop skilled Namibians that have to achieve the economic successes of the country in future. On that, let's have a listen to this engagement. And welcoming on this particular segment or this particular Monday morning for the Early Morning Scoop, we welcome Mr. Danny Mayer from SME Compete. Regarding the particular innovative but rather also interesting discussion that we just heard specifically coming through from the project manager of Waldorf School's particular Woody's project, which is also a business, and also the two learners. Mr. Mayer, good morning, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners.
Delighted to be with you, Dwight, and with the listeners. And please call me Danny, because if you refer to me as Mr. Mayor, people listening will wonder, who on earth are you talking to?
100%, Danny. Yes.
Okay.
Danny, if we take a look at the discussion, obviously, of entrepreneurship as a subject matter and entrepreneurship in reality, in many cases, obviously, this the assumption that I'm going to throw on this particular scenario, which is obviously something that is happening in a controlled setting from a school perspective, but then obviously it has been the sort of like missing link in terms of business evolution, if we're now using evolutionary terms. It's been the missing link in the Namibian broader context. Firstly, how do you feel specifically about school children being coached and being taught in terms of the value of being able to produce something, being able to engage with their customers, and finally being able to understand the nuances of business relations, customer engagement, and customer service?
Okay, Dwight, so it's commendable that Waldorf are doing this. And of course, the Ministry of Education has also introduced some years ago entrepreneurship in its curricula. So that's actually very, very commendable that we are positioning the youth today and preparing them for tomorrow. But I should just hasten to add that there's a high prevalence of entrepreneurship in Namibia. The problem is we sometimes can't separate, and then people just talk about entrepreneurship. They can't separate people who are self-employed and real entrepreneurs, individuals who display entrepreneurial traits.
Yeah.
So there are a high number of self-employed people, and if I might start at the bottom, you find in the high-density suburbs, the townships, the Lukasis, there'll be young men walking around with eggs, and layers of eggs and those cardboard containers, a bag of brochens and polonies. And so those are self-employed people. They're youth, probably school dropouts who can't get work, can't get gainful employment, but they're doing something constructively. They're walking around and they're selling that to people, and that becomes the lunch for many, many workers, or a snack and so on. Even for youth going to school and so on. So those are self-employed people. Behind those youngsters, and just picture in your mind's eye, it could be 10 or 15 of them, there would be an entrepreneur, probably a female, and she would be the one who prepares, buys the eggs and boils them, butters the bread rolls and goes out and sources the little polonies and so forth. And then these become like her agents. So they self-employed, but they're not entrepreneurs. The entrepreneurs behind her. And so that is where a lot of confusion comes in Namibia. We see a lot of entrepreneurs. There are actually a lot of self-employed, but not so many entrepreneurs. So what the schools are doing is excellent, because if you ignite a spark of entrepreneurship, if you at that early age already, and you do some practical, not only the theory, but the practical side, it'll bring out the ones in that group, in that class, in that cohort, shall we say, who will display entrepreneurial tendencies. They will say, wow, I like this, I enjoy this. And then they position themselves to actually either get further education, get some more practical experience. They might start a side hustle. And eventually they start in the informal sector, and then, which is the incubation for entrepreneurship in Namibia. And then they progress and they become the Opa Frans Ndongos of tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to sort of sketch that scenario, that we understand how important it is actually to start at a young age already. And it's commendable what Waldorf and the Ministry of Education is doing. Ministry of Education, however, is very much theory. Mm. And so they could probably learn from others, and maybe you should also add some practical components. Some schools do have entrepreneurship days, but, you know, there's no linkage with a teacher teaching that subject in the curricula at the school. That teacher will actually come and to a factory, take children on groups, in groups to go and visit, say, NAM dairies, you know, see how a business operates, or take them to the local show or expo.
Yeah.
So currently, there's an expo on in Kietmanswip. I've just come back from, Kietmanswip. In fact, it ended on Saturday. So it ran for most of the week, and I did, I had some activities down there, but I did one afternoon when we finished, sneak in a visit, and I thought, wow, this would have been so fantastic if some of the local schools, the teachers had taken groups of their learners through the show. There were a lot of young people there, obviously going to the, you know, the merry-go-round and so on. But actually walk them through the exhibits, get the people on the stands to tell them, you know, what are they doing, what products are they offering, whether it's a bank, an insurance company, and so on.
And
so there we are. I just wanted to sketch that scenario as we start off.
Which is actually one of the good things, because in many cases, the explainer or the definition sometimes touted in Namibia is one of certain particular requirements. But it's a good thing you highlighted the distinction between self-employed and someone that's actively and can be considered an entrepreneur, even though both of them qualify as an entrepreneur in some value.
Now, you see what will happen with the self-employed. Unfortunately, a high number of them, they don't actually want to do that. They want to have the safety and security of formal employment. So it's a good start for them. They earn, you know, they're earning some money. They can look after themselves and so on. But if an opportunity comes up where they can get a job, whether it's at a local supermarket, you know, as a cleaner or a pack or something, they will tend to just drop that and no longer engage in that activity, and they're going to formal employment. Whereas the entrepreneur, the one, that youngster who has seen, you know, how lovely it is to actually work for yourself, see opportunities, muster your resources, and provide that service or that goods, they're unlikely that they're going to be moved. They're not going to budge. They're going to say, this is the way I go, and I want to be my own business. They might go, you know, study, tertiary level, even get a trade or something, but their intent will always be to venture into business. And in the right time, they shall do so.
And now, if we also factor into the particular aspect of young people now being in the entrepreneurship phase or being exposed to the subject matter, but that the subject matter is coupled with a skill set or skills development program. Now,
very important.
I was surprised that they technically have a designated program known as a BVET, meaning Basic Vocational Education Training, which obviously gives the foundational introduction to woodwork and being able to work with wood and the tools, because there was also a grinder there in close proximity. And then they've got the other particular tools, for example, in working with smoldering technology, you know, that little pin thing with the, that smolders iron and burns onto wood and stuff like that. And that the learners were directly working at that moment with a customer order. The customer order was obviously someone that has seen and has regularly interacted with them to say, hey, listen, I like the crafts you guys are producing, and these are the particular requirements we'd like. Obviously, that has been about as much exposure as possible that the teacher has helped to create, or the project manager, and that the learners now get accustomed to, okay, so this is how you couple entrepreneurship with a skills development program in order to make something. If we look at the coupling exercise as well, Danny, the coupling obviously is something in it's unique, or what the marketing guys would call the niche offering, depending on what entrepreneur wishes to offer. It could be a service, it could be a good, or you could be selling a particular need, like, for example, the food aspect of things, which is the easiest to venture into. Mm-hmm. How critical is it that the association or the coupling of a skill set development program helps these youngsters to realize, hey, listen, there's various avenues I can explore with this particular background?
So what's actually happened, Dwight, is that they're laying a very solid foundation, actually. Mm. Because a lot of time will now be eliminated, wasted, where they're living. So already if they have that basic vocational skill, okay? So they see that if I take a piece of timber and I add value to it and make a product out of it, in that particular case scenario that you've shared, yes, where they, well, I remember there's a Mr. Frey. I don't know if he's still around, but I watched him in Otavarongo at a show at about 15 or 18 years ago.
Mm.
And he took a soldering iron, which he warmed, and then he would very artistically paint a picture on a piece of leather or a piece of wood. And so it seems like that is the sort of craft there that's being taught. Now, I before I was in Kitmanswip last week, I also worked in Luderitz, Rosh Pina and Oranjemund. And in Oranjemund, I went to the shopping center that's called East Gate. And I walk around just to see what the local entrepreneurs are doing. And there I found a little shop which was sort of selling pre-used products. So you know, one of these where people can go and sell their old iron or microwave.
Oh, like a pawn shop.
Yeah, like a pawn shop.
Yeah.
Pawn as in exchanging of the goods and service, not pawn as in that horrible.
When life gifts you.
Honey, the washing machine broke again.
Take control with Express Credit. Get fast, reliable relief when you need it most. Borrow 3,000 to 32,000 Namibian dollars, repayable over 2 to 5 months. Apply for a quick cash loan, easy application, same day approval. Visit www.expresscredit.com.na or SMS GIFT to 32274.
Exchanging of the goods and service, not porn, isn't that horrible? Okay. So just in case that people...
And that's a good thing you and I understand that.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So that guy actually had a picture up there, a wood picture, and I looked at it, admired it, and he said, you know, that was given to me by my father. Oh, I said, wow. He said, yeah, he bought it from a certain Mr. Ray. And I said, man, I met a guy just short of 2 decades ago.
Mm.
He used to go from show to show. He had a speech impediment. He stuttered, actually. So, you know, he sort of obviously wanted not to engage too much in conversation because of his impediment. Probably there's a degree of embarrassment.
Mm.
But I did talk with him. Fortunately, one of my daughters is a speech therapist, so she talks to me a lot about people who stutter and so on and how they try and get them out of it. And I was amazed, and I said to him, you know how valuable that is. So those youngsters, the ones who are autistic and do that, they're going to be a good opportunity for them. But the other basic skills that they're teaching there, such as carpentry and so on, are going to stand them in good stead. Because unfortunately in Namibia, there are much needed services for which there are no formal vocational training. And the example I will use is upholstery. There is nowhere in the country where you can go and do a course, a basic vocational
course,
program
yeah.
to learn upholstery. Now, the youngsters who venture into that usually have to go and work for an upholsterer and they learn the craft. Now, just think of it. Upholstery is a very, very easy way to go into business. Your entry barriers are quite low. You don't have to have lots of very expensive equipment. And the offtake, the demand for upholstery services, whether it's in a settlement, whether it's in a little town like, you know, Korichas or Davundu or Omakangi, the demand is there because it's motor vehicle seats that are upholstered, you know, pre-used vehicles. And then people might buy or inherit a couch or a sofa, chairs and so on. So there's constant demand for upholstery. And as I say, your costs of setting up and doing that. Now that skill is not trained anywhere in the country.
And
brick making.
And it's a particular skill that can be applied broadly in this country.
Everywhere. In a settlement, in a village, and the youngster, all they need initially would be one of those manual staplers, the big, not the ones you staple your paper together with, but you know, the bigger one. And then later on, as you go, you actually get a little compressor with an air stapler and so on. And inevitably, the client will bring their own material. They will say, I want to have brown seats, or I want this color fabric couch. They'll actually buy the material, or you tell them, okay, you're going to need 4 meters or 3 meters. So again, you don't have to carry and tie up a lot of money in stock. The client normally brings that. And what I've done with one of our clients, we have about 2,000 clients around the country. Clients, these are entrepreneurs. We call them clients, actually. One in Omathia, where he was doing upholstery. And not far down the road, there we had another client who was doing carpentry and joinery. And I said, guys, you should get together because you can start making furniture, chairs and tables. Because if you look at a couch or a, you know, chair, that's the frame under that chair is quite inexpensive. It's just, you know, pine wood, or you can even take recycled pallets that you buy from the local supermarket. After they've had their deliveries, they normally sell those pallets. And instead of using it for firewood, they, you know, they can use it, and I've seen it's used quite productively for making low-cost furniture and so on. So that is an area. There are many others. Brick making, for example, is also there's a little bit of training here and there, but not you know, in brick, Namibia, we know we've got a housing problem. We know that, and the facts, the figures speak for themselves. There's going to be a lot of building that needs to go on. People shouldn't be living in zinc plant houses. You know? So again, in the community, if you learn, and I believe the cement companies do offer some training, learn to make those building blocks and so on in your community, and people can buy 10 or 20 or 30 at a time as they, you know, they have money at the end of the month or so. And you as an entrepreneur, you will employ 3 or 4 or 5 people, and you'll be making bricks, and you'll be making a good living out of that. So
Get
back to the important, start early. We need to start with them early. And at school level is even better.
And when I interviewed the two learners, primarily it's a boy and a girl, both, one is older than the other. The boy was more, when I asked him in terms of does he like what he's doing in terms of being taught these skill sets, his personal preference was actually to have as much exposure to the theoretical work that he was exposed to when he was in primary school, for example, because when he moved to the school, he realized, oh my goodness, what's going on here? We're given freedom to express, to explore, and to see what we are, what affinity do we have to certain particular methods here on the secondary school level from grade 8. And I made the particular mistake of thinking that the Waldorf school system is literally similar to the Montessori school system. And I was corrected there immediately on the spot. It's actually a similar system, the Steiner system, which helps to with the exploration. The child explores what they feel like, and then they coach the child from there.
I also have a lot of respect for that system. I have not been exposed to it, neither my children. But I, you know, the more I hear about it, I also get quite excited because, as you say, it gives the child the opportunity to see what they like. to like what they do and do what they like. And you know, we're all different. And if you have that freedom where you can really, you jump out of bed in the morning and you want to go and do it because you really enjoy doing it. I mean, there's no better motivation than that, quite frankly.
Now, Danny, one of the particularly important things that stems from this particular exercise that I quickly researched while talking to the head teacher, not the principal, but the project manager teacher, mm-hmm. is that this particular initiative, and as well as also establishing the business vehicle to help the children with exposure to the business side of things, was based upon the need that came from COVID, because she herself was a former alumni, a former learner of this particular school. And she, unfortunately, she had these skills, but she could not access things because of lockdowns and the likes like that. Obviously, it's born out of a needs a scenario based upon need, based upon an emergency. But if this potential exercise, for example, was replicated on a broader level, trying to help children factor into that they've got a life where they've got to deal with the economy after high school, this obviously would have potentially given us a slightly better environment in terms of how entrepreneurship would have been a lot more stronger. Am I possibly just, you know, clutching at a straw in terms of a hopeful position that we could have had, or is it something that could have potentially been an avenue to embolden, to strengthen the entrepreneurial base in the country?
No, I think that you certainly are on the right track. I just think of COVID gave us a wake-up call when it comes to food security.
Mm.
And I've been amazed to see what is going on now when I work in the northern regions, how many youngsters have actually gone into agriculture, growing, cropping, and so on. And a youngster that I met north of Utapi, he graduated from NUST in agriculture, and he applied for jobs and he couldn't get anything. So he decided, well, let me go back to where I come from, which is Utapi. And he then tried with chickens, and he said, oh, you know, the feed, you just didn't make any. And then he said, thought, well, let me find a place. And he found a place 25 kilometers on the Ruakana Road, quite close to the canal. And the lady who owns it was happy to let him, you know, rent a hectare. He started off, he's now got 5 hectares.
Mm.
But I mean, not only does he grow, but he also adds value. So he dries the tomato, he dries the spinach, he's making chicken food, pig feed as well.
Mm.
So, you know, imagine if a lot of the schools actually just had a garden where you could actually then, those kids who are interested, I mean, they're growing, they firstly see that, you know, tomatoes come from a field, you grow them, they don't come from a supermarket fruit.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of youngsters think more comes from a supermarket. They didn't realize that with the whole value chain and so on. So that would be excellent. And then add also some technical things, like, for example, you can already at high school, at secondary school, start teaching metal craft, welding.
Yeah.
These are skills that are needed in the country. Not all the kids are going to be sufficiently academic to get into a vocational training center. But I've seen some of the better artisans are actually unqualified artisans, people who've learned how to do the job. They don't have the paper, but I can tell you they can do electrics, carpentry, welding, light engineering better than many skilled craftsmen, because they've done it, they've got the passion and so on. So you're right, we should be focusing a lot more, because we know, and especially now with a lot of talk about the exploration industry, mining and so on, we are going to need tradesmen, we're going to need skilled people.
Mm.
And those mines and companies, they don't like to take on employees, they like to engage service providers. And they're constantly coming to us at SMB Compete and saying we want to engage some plumbers. Do you have? And we say, yeah, we give them contacts, because by nature they don't want to have big workforces. They want to, when they have a job or a service, they want to employ the carpenter joiner for that, the welder for that, and so on. And
So they wish to empower more the local content policy that we've been seeking for the past 2 years, but on a contractual basis. Obviously, it's now how private sector has its own procurement system that emboldens those small businesses to participate more in the activity.
Yeah, and it's not only working, let's say, working for a mine, because around the mine, close to the mine, there'll be farmers underneath. So let's say the welder, the light engineering service provider, who has 6, 8, 10 employees. And the president keeps reminding the nation that it's the micro small enterprises that are the largest creators collectively of jobs in the country. So let's say they're doing work periodically for a mine in the area, welding and so on. There would be more than enough work to keep them going throughout the course of the year, because the farmers will have fences, they need to have gates fixed, there'd be sheds to be put up and so on. So it's a way to actually grow the economy from the grassroots up. I've seen it with upholstery people who also do canvas work. So the lodges in the south, you know, they have these canvas covers over their Land Rovers when they take tourists out and so on. They had those all repaired across the border in Springbok until we introduced them to an upholsterer in Rosh Pinna and said, you got a guy right here on your doorstep. One day I drove past the mine, as usually they do put this recreational facility sporting, and I saw a guy rolling up a tennis net. So I stopped and I spoke to him, and he said, what's happening here? And he said, oh, I've got to, this is going to South Africa for fixing. Now the net has a tape on the top, and obviously the sun, you know, with the climate in Namibia. That needs to be replaced. And I said, no, please. You don't actually have to send that to Springbok in South Africa. There's a person right here in this town who can do that for you. And, you know, he then did that for them. So you see, these are things we need to, and that's why, I mean, we started SME Computers to also help, because you see, entrepreneurs constantly need to be encouraged, mentored, not because entrepreneurs like to do what entrepreneurs do, which is, you know, make things, create things, make dresses, whatever. They don't like the bookkeeping side, the paperwork side. And so it is important, because there are laws, and quite strictly the compliance in Namibia. So we have to say to them, no, you need to understand the importance of record keeping, bookkeeping, sticking to the Labor Act so you don't get yourself in trouble. There are certain requirements in terms of your employees, contracts, pay slips and things like that. So you know, we need to start at the bottom up, and I'm so pleased that you have invited me onto this program this morning, because really what you've discovered there, you know, it's a way we can start, shall I say, a revolution in the country in terms of job and wealth creation.
100%. Danny, I'd like to thank you for taking the time. There was another question I had, but obviously because of time pressing us slightly.
We'll have another time, Dwight. Don't worry. I'm not going anywhere. If you ever have a gap and you need to talk, and if you ever want to bring a few entrepreneurs on your program to encourage others, I know your station has quite a broad listenership across the country. Actually, I'm always amazed when I drive in areas and then where it's difficult to get a reception, suddenly you guys pop up there. So, you know, if we can be of any help, because we've got to grow this economy. We can't continue, you know, the sluggish growth rate that we've experienced. We can't expect foreigners to come here and create jobs. It's got to be done by Namibians. And it's possible right there at settlement, village, and town level. So thanks for having me on your program.
Not a problem. Thank you. Coming back there from the engagement right there, dear listeners, heading into the last 12 minutes. There is an opportunity for you to come through in terms of contributing in that last 10-ish minutes. We'll quickly also just be skimming over some of the particular headlines that will be coming from the Villager e-papers this morning's Monday edition in terms of just citing to you primarily some of the talking points. Now, if you've not had the particular chance yet at opening up the said particular delivery for this morning, because obviously we digitally, you know, we've got subscribers and they digitally get delivered. And if you've not had the opportunity, spoiler alert, just to let you know, just on our front page for this morning, we've got the discussion on government financing that needs to be increased to 33.6 billion. And this is based upon the particular discussion in terms of raising finances about the budget deficit and also between the government's planned expenditure and its expected revenue for the 2026 financial year. Then we've also got interesting discussions coming through in terms of the appointment of a task force for economic recovery, health and housing by the president. And this is a particular discussion based upon citing the various particular interesting talking points that came from the Namibia Public Private Forum. It was held a couple, you know, week and a half back. And this particular insight obviously was where in the public sector and the private sector were trying to find the common ground in terms of advancing Namibia's particular economic goals. Our particular insight also comes through from a discussion on human wildlife conflict community awareness exercise, specifically with my colleague Anakleta Ikera, highlights how residents of the village of Kamuchonga, in the Mukwe constituency were demonstrating due to the particular surge in wildlife encounters in their vicinity. And then we also have the notion in terms of the Electricity Control Board workshops that are trying to deliberate green scheme electricity tariffs. But before that, let's get to some of the callers' contributions. Eagle FM, good morning.
Morning, Dwight. How are you?
Good morning, Gabona. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you very much, man. Oh, from morning up to this time, But I think I can just take 2 minutes or so. Is this done that I always read in the newspaper?
The Wadangabona.
So reading every time you read entrepreneurship, you read about creation of wealth, you read about all these economic issues and mentorship, skill development. There's always a Danny that I read there in the newspaper.
It's him, Angabona.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I think myself, I would really love to meet up with him. I will make a deliberate effort on that. And it's very important.
You can just call Lagabona.
Oh my God. It's my really, those are the people that really we need. But the only thing is that maybe how people are missing his teaching. And mentorships, kind of skill development. It's on the issue of clients and entrepreneurs.
Or even customer service, Uncle Bono, because...
Yeah, customer service.
Yeah.
So if you use this word, like client, we are clients. Everybody there in this different sector, they use this language, different kind of language and these concepts. And this one's, the meaning sometimes is so narrow. Become so narrow, like clients. When you use clients to mean entrepreneurs,
yeah,
it's a good thing. But many other people outside there, even economists, they will not understand. They will think clients are those for the doctor, for the lawyers, and many customs and all these kind of things. And custom maybe it's for PEP and OK and you know, these models.
It's actually a good thing, Angabona, you pointed out like that, because in some of the discussions that usually come about and some of the things I've read, where you had economists writing, you know, papers and articles and opinion pieces and explaining things, they speak from a formal economic standpoint. But in many cases, no one can clearly define, for example, on the the grassroots level of things. For example, how a upholsterer can be a client to a, let's say, a seamstress or a tailor. And how a seamstress and a tailor is the client of a formalized distributor of the material.
In our informal enterprise, that's why people are now, even when you talk about, I was interacting with one of the principal in the rural area, and it's good to mention these things. This is where the sector of productions, for example, the land, and the mention of that example of the nasty graduate and things like that. All these people need to be organized and be given the language that they are common, they are accustomed to.
Yep.
So it's very important, but they are entrepreneurs. Yep. That's why they come and they say, no, so in the commercial subject, of course, maybe entrepreneurs is just kind of a topic. I don't know whether it's a chapter. And it's something that is to be a daily kind of a thing. Entrepreneurship, because they are saying, no, entrepreneurs, even at this level, they say, no, it's not everybody can become an entrepreneur. Look at the children there where you interview, how they are making money, the art, all those integration of those subjects is very important. And the language, of course, because you know, entrepreneurship plans, all this kind of custom and what.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. I love his inspiration and his idea. And for you now to talk about all those things, you went down to the village, I mean to the school level, and the people must really inculcate that that spirit of entrepreneurship, because it's entrepreneurship who are going to create wealth through other people. And they are the ones who are going to utilize all this, what is it, the factor of production, you know, the capital, the land, and what. And they are remaining idle. They cannot be utilized. They cannot be developed. It's because we lack this, perhaps is the language or understanding of who and how to become entrepreneurship. And if you go there to the way they are getting funding, because of the time, so I'm ending up here. So please, I think you are coming in the evening.
Yep, yep, I'll be back, Uncle Bono.
And they don't give us the last minute discussion, like you do, because you always do it better when Helmut is not there. I know he's bombarded by examination.
Helmut is back today. He's back today.
When he comes, we are also stressed. We have exam.
All right, Uncle Bono, thanks for coming through.
No problem.
Now, obviously, some of the important particular talking points that stem from the engagements, here's the thing, dear listeners, is that it's a good thing to understand also, particularly you yourself, whether or not you wish to be an entrepreneur or do you wish to be someone who wants to be a salary taker. In many cases, for example, like in my family itself, you know, we've got a bunch of people that they have an entrepreneurial spirit, but then sometimes you have to ask the question around ethics. Here's another particular talking point. But there are particular cues. And when I say cues, these are pinpointers or pointers or sort of like dots on a chart or something predictable that you can try and observe. Is you've got to see whether or not what the person is trying to put on or put forward as an offering to a market is actually accessible. Is it something that gets promoted? Is it something that actually meets particular needs or can actually be bought? In many cases, for example, you would be surprised. You would be literally surprised. You know, the sophistication of Namibian consumers, the willingness of Namibian consumers to actually buy into homemade products and products made by hand. And products made specifically for niche markets that are not mass produced, that do not have 1,000 people, workforce, factories and transport companies behind it, but it's just a person and their family specifically putting in the time, putting in the effort to bottle, to process, to manufacture, to technically, you know, or refine certain particular products and the likes. Some of the particular things also that stem from this is also the accessibility of said particular product. You would have heard in the engagement with Madam Nurukom specifically that they rely on a centralized point where they know customers show up. Now, not many particular entrepreneurs in the country are that particular lucky. I call it lucky, not privileged, the lucky, because Windhoek sets the scene. But if you go out of Windhoek, do you see a replication of the same particular activity? Now, establishing markets close to where you can find a lot of customers or consumers is crucial. If things are left up to the machinations, for example, of a local authority who decides, yes, you must go and try and sell your wares there in Komasdal, it makes it problematic. Because here's the main question. Do the customers come there? Is it at a centralized hub? Is it an accessible hub? Is it something that is easy to spot, easy to come by, and thus interact with? Because, like I've said countless times specifically, and yes, my particular insights into distribution, because I look at distribution every day here. Distribution is not just about a courier company or about how you send something. Distribution is literally based upon how accessible is a business, a venture, an entrepreneur and their products and services to customers and consumers. If it is too difficult for a customer and consumer to get access to you, you will never be able to make the envisaged income that you wished to make unless you move. If you're not accessible, guys, access to your customers is the single most important thing specifically in the survival of any small business, any micro business, any even, there's a term that my sister loves using. Mom and pop shops or mom and pop businesses. These are family businesses. Any family business is accessibility. Accessibility. So, understand the realm of accessibility. Understand the realm specifically of access to goods and access to your client and access to markets. And you will see the particular benefits just based upon accessibility pay off. A market, for example, like what the Woody's initiative by the Waldorf School, has is primarily, it's a centralized established market. They know that there is feet that comes through there. It has the potential to access Namibians and tourists, international tourists who can then see at equal level, specifically the various products and services on sale. And what people can access. Now we'll quickly be taking a short break, dear listeners. We'll be coming back after that. We'll actually be saying our goodbyes, so that my colleague Mike would obviously be waiting, you know, expectantly to engage with you upon the particular discussions that he has planned for you. And before we actually do that, we'll be back right after this short break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo Iho etike kovano ile koshuwana Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa Nune uto otukwetira o special ange Tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM Onmora esatu imwe bali heali Nola natu heali bali no heali Ileko mberewa Nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu Oma felane Eagle FM The Eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have...
Right there. Do stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company during the course of this Monday. Welcome to November specifically, which is, you know, we're about a month and 27 days away from the end of the year. I know time has sped up, but obviously we're into a new month. Business goes on and we specifically on Eagle FM will continue bringing you the insightful discussions as we always do. Stay tuned for the unpacking the day right after this short break. and we'll see each other again later today.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Well, dear listeners, as we are quickly just working on particular connecting back to our Ondangwa studio, in terms of just the conversations, obviously that came through a little bit. It is important to identify, obviously, at the bedrock what is needed. Now, just particularly the interaction between myself and Mr. Mayor just before the end of this morning show of the early morning scoop, cited particularly important talking points that need to help us understand, you know, that when it comes to
anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any.
On that note, dear listeners, we change over back to the Ondangwa.
Funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafa sana na nongeshefa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongo tisamweni. Anageshefa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayaguro nirandi toma iwe yongeshefa yoyo kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngwe tuende timeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimupo yomo programa letu. Moambo dengira selma kodara hita tuimu. Datu heari hamano tano onyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.